Our next case is Jisoo Lee v. Google, 2021-1576. Good morning, Mr. Maskell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Ben Maskell, and we are here on an appeal from the Patent Trial and Appeals Board that the Board found that claims 45 and 46 of the 518 patent are unpatentable over two references, and that is Yamada and Rosenquist. The 518 patent at issue here relates to a method for transmitting, receiving, and ultimately displaying traffic state maps. And in under the world of this patent that it lives in, you start with a basic map and add to that a received traffic state map. And both maps are made of a term called image vector entities. And this is a coined term, and this term is the subject of the only construction in this matter. And luckily, at least on appeal here, the construction is not in dispute.
Counsel, can I just ask you kind of a threshold issue, which for me seems to be an elephant in the room, which is your blue brief, at least. I mean, you appealed the board's final written decision, but also the rehearing decision, right? That was part and parcel of your appeal. And the rehearing decision, essentially, with maybe one exception, consists of the arguments you're making here on appeal. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. And they said you would waive them below. In blue, you raise the arguments again, not even referencing the decision that's on appeal, which is the rehearing, or challenging the fact that the board said you would waive them below and not made these arguments below. So one, you haven't challenged them. Two, you haven't even referenced that as being something that's relevant to the appeal, which I certainly think it is. What am I missing?
Sure, Your Honors. And let me address that issue head on. At least as to the issue of waiver, the patentee could not have anticipated the type of errors that the board would have made.
I want to know more so. Why don't you start with the process? Your counsel, you've got an appeal here that includes a decision denying your request for rehearing based on waiver. And in your appeal brief, you don't even mention it, let alone try to dispute the conclusions of the board that you hadn't raised these arguments sufficiently below. Isn't that the starting point for us? And how are we supposed to start at the point we should be starting if Blue never even talks about it?
Your Honor, you raise a very good point. And at least in the blue, in our opening brief, the patentee addressed the issues that were stated in the final written decision. And then, of course, the...
But you disagree the petition for rehearing, the denial of rehearing was before you, too. That's on appeal as well. How could that happen? I mean, was that an oversight? Was that something that you think it's okay or correct to not even reference it and challenge it, since that's the matter? That seems to be a threshold hurdle that we would have to get by, would it not be?
Your Honors, it's an extraordinarily important issue, and we will agree that it's a good argument. It's important, and I think that we do have arguments ultimately why there has not been waiver, or if there's waiver, that there's a gray areas that the court should
never
listen
to. Well, is it too late for you to make those arguments now, or even to the extent you may have made something on gray?
Your Honors, at the threshold, we don't believe that there has been a waiver. And I can certainly explain why we believe there has been.
Well, we're talking about two waivers here, so be specific. We're talking about the waiver that the board concluded you did below, and then we're talking about kind of a waiver thing of you're not raising that on appeal. So which waiver are you talking about?
Ron, first we'd like to talk about the waiver below at the board. And we certainly don't believe that there's a waiver there. There's a number of issues here, and I think the strongest issue is whether or not, and against waiver, the strongest matter against waiver is what happened at the Patent Trial and Appeals Board with respect to the very first limitation of claims 45 and 46, and that's displaying a traffic state map of time-variant image vector entities. And the arguments that the patentee presented, both in the response and then on the request for rehearing are ostensibly rooted in the exact same issue that was raised all along. And
you're making these arguments now, but you didn't make them in the blue brief. Am I wrong? I mean, you're going to tell me that you did raise this in blue?
You are correct, Your Honor. They were not raised in the blue brief.
Okay. So we should entertain them now in argument in the first instance?
Well, I think that there's two issues of appeal. One is the final written decision, and the final written decision can be reviewed on the standard for substantial evidence. And then there is also the motion for reconsideration, which was there's deemed a waiver, and that can be reviewed under an abuse of discretion. So I think it matters what you want to look at. And so if we consider this as an appeal from the final written decision, then we don't touch the waiver. And if we if the appellee wants
Well, how do we not touch the waiver? Even if we were to agree with you from A to Z on your challenges to the final written decision, if there are new arguments that were not made before the board, then that matters nothing.
Right.
In terms of how we come out.
And, Your Honor, we disagree that there are new arguments. And so we can certainly point to portions of the patent owner's response that identifies what these arguments are. And we will acknowledge that they could have been made in greater detail, but they are there. And
they are there in blue? I thought you would tell me they weren't in blue.
They are there, and I'm talking about the board, what happened in front of the board.
Okay.
And so at least in front of the board, there's numerous statements by the patentee that the combination of these two references, Yamada and Rosenquist, doesn't teach each and every limitation of the claims. Now, I think it's important to appreciate the arguments that the patentee made, given the procedural posture of this case. This case is a little bit unique in that it was originally filed, the petition was originally filed in 2015. The Patent Trial and Appeals Board cited five grounds. The Patent Trial and Appeals Board decided that four of the grounds didn't have any merit, but ground two could actually go forward for a full hearing. This case ended up, the petition...
I agree with you. It's unique, and it's SAS-based, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. The fact that it's unique doesn't help you or doesn't...
And I ask it when the court considers waiver, I ask the court to consider what the patentee was facing when it had to file the patent owner's response on remand. And what it's looking at is it's looking at the argument that it made before the board back in 2016. And the board said, you're right, there's no question, there's no substantial question of patentability here, and we're not going to institute on ground three. And the patent owner's reply, patent owner's response brief almost verbatim copied the original patent owner's response because it worked. It was a prevailing argument. And in the interest of judicial efficiency and not burying the PTAB in paper, going down every possible argument in a rabbit hole, the patentee restated the argument that the board found compelling in the first place. And you must imagine our surprise that when the board came back and said, we've actually changed our mind on this.
But you had also the benefit of seeing the petitioner's reply to your patent owner response on remand. And the petitioner's reply was highlighting how the institution decision overlooked the reliance by the petitioner on the Rosenquist reference. And the institution decision incorrectly and overly narrowly focused its analysis on just the Yamada reference. And I think, at a minimum, that put your side on high alert that to at least go back and consult the original petition and confirm whether or not Rosenquist was being discussed and relied upon. And in fact, it was. We can all look at the petition today and see that. And so, in that sense, you did have the notice there, and it was incumbent upon you, if you wanted to file a surreply in that time, to have your opportunity to join the issue. And the problem we have here is you didn't exercise that opportunity, and then you didn't raise your more Rosenquist-based arguments until your request for rehearing after the final written decision. So in that sense, While I have some sympathy for you as to how to construct a patent owner response on remand from this court, you had everything that you needed to know about what could possibly come in a final written decision after you looked at the petitioner's reply. So could you please respond to that?
Yes, and Your Honor, you're absolutely correct. And there are some other facts that are in the record, although I would say implicitly in the record, and that exactly the time after the patent owner's initial response was filed and after the petitioner's reply brief was filed, the patent owner's counsel made a request to withdraw from the case. and for the reasons that attorneys normally withdraw from cases. And this really disrupted the patentee's opportunity to prepare and submit a surreply. And ultimately, that's not this court's problem, but that should be something that is considered in considering the grand equities of the getting to the right decision, which is this court's ultimate charge, is to get to the right decision. The patentee filed a response, and their counsel withdrew before they could file a surreply. The patentee in this case, his name is Jisoo Lee. He's an individual. He lives in Korea. And this matter has been going on since 2015. And so 7 years for an individual paying for attorneys who nearly at the finish line, his attorneys withdraw from the case. And it's extraordinarily difficult for him. And at least the decision at that point was, well, we can't reasonably hire more counsel and we're going to have to submit in the briefs. And that's what they did. But then when we get the opinion, and Your Honor, you're absolutely right that there were important issues that were raised in the petitioner's reply that were unresponded to. But we don't think that creates a waiver, at least as to the fundamental argument that we have, which is that these two references do not teach or disclose the limitations at issue here.
You could have identified those issues and limitations in your patent owner response, though, right?
And I
guess that's kind of the challenge. I mean, you narrowly selected two issues in your patent owner response, no motivation to combine Yamada and Rosenquist, and then issue number two, Yamada doesn't teach an attribute designating statement. That's how I understand the patent owner response. And now I understand you want to identify several other things that you don't think either Yamada or Rosenquist teach, but the opportunity was right there before you in the patent owner response to identify that. There wasn't anything further you needed to be educated about throughout the proceeding subsequent to your patent owner response to have already known about those possible defects in a Yamada-Rosenquist combination. Is that right?
Your Honor, the Yamada-Rosenquist combination, at least as proposed by the petitioner, and in the reply brief, which we'll acknowledge was not responded to, they did raise a number of points that they allege in the patent office accepted as true, that Rosenquist teaches the three types of designating statements. But what we saw from the board on the opinion was a jump beyond what was asked for by the petitioner here. And that is specifically relates to the construction of this image vector entity, which is kind of the core of the dispute here. And the image vector entity, the last 10 words of the construction of that are that these designating statements are used to display the shape of a real entity at the specified position.
Counsel, you're well into your rebuttal time. You can continue or save it.
Your Honor, well, we will save it. Thank you, Judge.
Ms. Simmons.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Lou Ann Simmons for Appellee Google. The questioning that Your Honors raised with my esteemed colleague on the other side of the aisle really hits right on the threshold issue that is before the Court today, which is the issue of waiver. And as Judge Prost noted, it's actually a double waiver, or sort of a waiver within a waiver. We think this threshold issue is straightforward and is dispositive of this entire appeal. To be clear, we believe that should the Court decide to excuse the waivers and entertain the merits, the Board's decision is fully supported by substantial evidence, the Board's final written decision, finding that claims 45 and 46 of the 518 patent are invalid. And we've laid that out, I think, pretty clearly in our briefing. Obviously, I'm happy to answer any questions about the merits. But just to...
If we were to go down that route, would we have to, as a threshold matter, reverse or vacate the Board's decision on reconsideration, which is also before us on appeal?
Your Honor, I don't believe that this Court... I think remand to the Board, if that's... Maybe I'm not understanding the question, but if the Court were to consider the merits and decide that the waiver does not dispose of the appeal in its entirety, we don't believe or we submit that there would be no need to remand the issue back to the Board so that it consider the new arguments that Mr. Lee is raising on appeal.
No, that wasn't my question.
I'm sorry.
My question was just more of a process question, which is we've got the final board decision and we've got this rehearing decision. The rehearing decision says you waived it. If we were to reject that, I mean, if we get to the merits, it means we've rejected the board's decision on rehearing, so we would have to reject it, i.e. vacate it or something, and then get to the merits and say they were wrong, and that would be under an abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor. There is no dispute that the standard of review for the board's finding of waiver is abuse of discretion. And we submit that not only did the appellant failed to address this issue at all in the blue brief, but that there wouldn't have been anything they could have shown in any event that would be evidence sufficient to show abuse of discretion. The board clearly laid out in its denial of the request for rehearing where it went through each of the arguments that Mr. Lee made in its request for rehearing and indicated that such arguments were not found in the patent owner's response on remand. And there was, in fact, one instance where the patent owner cited to a particular page in the patent owner response, and the board took a look at that and said, no, that's actually not the argument that was made. And that's at, let me just give you the cite for that. I believe it's at Appendix 25. The board fully considered Mr. Lee's attempt to indicate where previous arguments, the arguments he was making on rehearing, had been made in the patent owner's response and determined that no such arguments had been made and that therefore they had been waived.
Well, arguably there is an issue that hasn't been waived, and that's the motivation to combine. So why don't you spend a minute on that or two?
So it is a slightly different calculus when it comes to the motivation to combine, agreed on that. But there is still a double waiver, and that is because in their blue brief before this court, Mr. Lee did not raise the issue of motivation to combine. There's a section header that refers to motivation to combine, but the actual arguments in that section do not address the board's findings on motivation to combine. And so the first or most recent in time waiver was before this court, because Mr. Lee did not...
Well, let's assume we don't categorize that as a waiver. We just say, well, yeah, they didn't make the right arguments, and that's it's more of a merits dispute. So why don't you address that as if it were a merits argument?
Sure, but the second waiver, I absolutely am happy to talk about the substance. I did want to point out that there was also a waiver under this court's finding in Polycom versus Fullview at 767 Federal Appendix 970, because Mr. Lee did not raise the motivation to combine challenges in his request for rehearing before the board. So while the request for rehearing is optional...
I don't understand. If Mr. Lee raises it in the proceeding itself, and he needs to also raise it again in the request for rehearing in order to preserve the issue for appeal at the Federal Circuit?
Yes, Your
Honor. He can't just target specific issues in the request for a rehearing?
He cannot, Your Honor,
still preserving other issues that were decided against him in the final written decision?
Your Honor, this court found differently and said no to answer that question.
What did we say? What was that?
In the Polycom versus Fullview case...
This is a non-correct opinion, right?
I'm sorry?
This
yes,
This is a
correct.
Non-precedential okay. opinion.
That's correct. That is correct. In the Polycom versus Fullview case, this court found that while the request for rehearing procedure is an optional procedure, once a party elects to go down that route, that party must raise all arguments that it wishes to make or preserve for appeal to this court so that the board may consider it. It follows with the rationale behind all of this court's waiver decisions, which for issues that have arisen in the Patent Office, because this court wants to...
Why? If there's something special about a rehearing that necessitates a rehearing, like you got something procedural wrong or you considered this, so you're saying that under our case law, non-precedential, of course, so it's not binding on this panel, but that even if you know, there's one sort of mundane question that you think is procedural. You got to put every other issue in that you have, every other debate point in with respect to the final written decision, or else you've waived it?
That is what this court held in Polycom, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, let's assume we don't feel compelled to follow that decision.
Okay, absolutely. The board's decision finding that there was adequate evidence to support a motivation to combine is supported by substantial evidence. And that is clear from the record. The board went through in detail and relied on the unrebutted expert testimony of Dr. Michelson, Google's expert during the IPR, and showed what the motivations were to combine were based on that unrebutted testimony and based on the disclosures in Yamada and Rosenquist. And in particular, the board's discussion of this is at Appendix 19 through 20 preliminarily, and then at Appendix 25 through 27, which is in the final written decision. The board explained that Dr. Michelson had shown that a person of skill in the art would have seen that adding the information disclosed in the TMC messages from Rosenquist to Yamada's traffic display system would improve Yamada's system by making the information easier to see, more user-friendly, by having a more efficient mechanism for delivering the information, and by formatting the information that was delivered to the system for display in a better, more efficient, and ultimately more user-friendly way. Dr. Michelson also explained that a person skilled in the art would have been motivated to combine the references because the combination would end up with a system that was safer for the users to use, because it would have been easier to quickly look at the map, see what a traffic situation was based on the colors and the shapes described in Rosenquist without having to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what was going on. So safer system, more user-friendly system, better and more efficient transmittal of the traffic information itself. Those are the reasons that Dr. Michelson laid out and that the board relied on in the final written decision at Appendix 25 through 27. So substantial evidence.
I'm not obsessing over this Polygon thing, but I just have to ask you, because I just tried to check the table of contents in red, and you didn't cite it in red. Is that because it issued after you filed the brief?
No, Your Honor, it was simply an oversight, and I apologize for that.
But did you make the argument in red that you're making today?
We did not. And actually,
another waiver issue.
Yeah, well, this is
triple waiver.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I take that. That's my responsibility. I was honestly a bit surprised about the Polycom decision. I was surprised to find it. So I apologize that we didn't cite it in our brief. If Your Honors had no further questions about either the merits or the waiver arguments, I'll submit on the briefs.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Maskell has a little rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. We want to just one issue on the merits, and that is what we believe to be our strongest argument on appeal, and that is whether there was substantial evidence to find that Rosenquist teaches the claimed image vector entities. And what we believe to be kind of the most important thing here, and the kind of the prime reason that we're on appeal, is that the Patent Trial and Appeals Board failed to properly apply its own construction in finding these image vector entities in Rosenquist. And the key part of this construction is that the designating statements are used to draw the shape of real entities at the specified position. And if the court wanted to find some extraordinarily clear error, and this is the reason that we believe this case should be reversed, it's on Appendix page 25. And if you look at Appendix page 25, and it says, based on the foregoing, we find that Rosenquist teaches, and then they recite the definition of image vector entity, because Rosenquist's TMC messages include information representing image to be displayed in a particular format as discussed above. And so what is discussed above, and you don't actually have to go off page 25, you can just go up to the very first line of 25. And it says, Rosenquist discloses displaying the contents of the messages, and the symbols that are displayed are illustrated in figure 4 as various shapes. And so I want to juxtapose what the claim construction requires, which is the shape of real entities at the specified location. The shape of a real entity, that's a road, that's a building, that's a mountain. But Rosenquist displays symbols. And if you look at what figure 4 of Rosenquist is, it's a star. There's an arrow. That's not the shape of a real entity. And that is the claim construction that the PTAB came to, is that it must be the shape of the real entity. And it says Rosenquist teaches this. Rosenquist doesn't. Rosenquist teaches showing symbols. And so for this reason, which we believe that is the strongest argument that we have, and this court must be the relief valve to help the patentee to correct the actions of the Patent Trial and Appeal Board. We want to dissuade the court from taking a hyper-technical application of the rules of waiver and finding that these arguments were waived. The patentee did below argue that the claim that the references didn't disclose each and every limitation of the claims at issue. And so, but it's most important to reach the right decision. And where there is manifest error, as there is here, and as you can see, it completely neatly circumscribed on page 25, we ask this court reverse.
Footnote 1, 836, 837, this is the rehearing decision. The board points out that Mr. Lee's counsel below did not seek to withdraw until after the certify period was over. Is that right?
Your Honor,
an accurate statement of what happened?
Your Honor, to the best of my knowledge, yes, and I must admit that I was retained on this very recently.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.
Your Honor, Judge Chen, if I may respond to that, I did remember something. The PTAB would not allow them to withdraw until after the briefing was completed.
Right, but the motion to withdraw was not filed until after the time period for a potential certify had expired.
Yes, and they had refused to file it.
I'm sorry?
The previous counsel had refused to file a certify. And he is stuck with the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. To both counsel.